Now in their second season, Leadership of the Leaf, with more cigar knowledge and more leadership insights. Two great leaders smoking great cigars. Here's our host, Austin and Dice. Grab a drink and jump in with a cut and a light.
All right, welcome everyone to another episode of Leadership of the Leaf. My name is Dice.
I'm Austin.
All right, Austin, we have a great show set up for today, man.
Oh, I'm excited. We got an interview today.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited. I don't know if anyone's been on Instagram or been paying attention to anything cigar related, but we actually got Michelle from Cigars by M, Moments with Michelle. And before she comes on air, I want to know what you are smoking, my friend.
I'm smoking the Monte Cristo White Rothschild.
Oh, and we're pairing that Monte Cristo White with a...
Well, it's a wheat whiskey that I smoked with oak wood chips.
Oh, you smoked it. Oh,
I
that
did.
Sounds lovely.
It is. It's delicious. All right. What are you smoking? What are you smoking? I got to know.
I'm smoking a Monte Cristo Espada. I probably said that wrong. Espada Oscuro. I do say everything wrong. Escuro. That means it's dark. Dark. And I'm pairing that with...
What Hennessy?
I was waiting for that. I'm actually pairing it with XO. The band on it was so ornate, I had to drink it with XO.
You fancy, huh?
Yeah.
Did you get your hair done, nails done, everything
done? Oh, I get a haircut this weekend, sir. Leave me alone. All right. So our cigar portion, we're going to have an interview ready for you guys. And then our leadership portion, just real quick, is going to be four components of effective leadership. And I'm looking forward to that.
I'm excited for that one. Now let's see what the effective leadership components could be, because I feel like, you know, I don't know any of them.
Fair enough. I agree. But at this time, I'd like to introduce Cigars by M, Moments with Michelle. All right, Michelle, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all? Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on. We're doing fantastic.
No, I Great. Definitely appreciate you coming on air. Just real quick before we get started, I just want to know, are you smoking a cigar with us today?
Yes, I actually am. Shout out to Martinez Hand Roll Cigars in New York. I'm smoking one of their cigars right now. This is a Corona of their New York blend. Actually was Cigar of the Week a couple weeks ago. So if you ever in New York, definitely stop by Martinez Cigars. You will not regret it.
Okay. Well, okay. I do go to New York every now and again, and I will definitely
yes.
look forward to it. Yes, 100%.
Yeah, you need to go see David and Jesus in the Cigar Factory. They actually hand roll cigars there every day. So it is a quite amazing experience. So if you are in New York and you have some time, definitely do that.
You sold me.
Right. Yeah,
I'm down.
Yeah.
We got to go. You sold me.
Yes, you do need to go.
We'll be like our homegirl Michelle sent us here. Hook us up.
Yeah, and yeah, he'll probably call me and say, Michelle, you sent these people here.
yeah, we go way back.
Absolutely.
Okay, Michelle, I came across a post on Instagram and it caught my attention, and I was like, I will reach out to her and see if we can get her on our podcast to talk about cigars. So I'm going to go ahead and just ask right out the gate, what is Cigars by M?
So Cigars with M is a cigar education show. I primarily focus on teaching consumers about cigars and making it very plain for them so that they're able to understand, and helping bridge that gap between the consumer and the retailers, cigar company owners, and manufacturers. So with the show, it allows me to be able to kind of reach people from all over the world. And I'm grateful that I'm able to do it, because Cigars with M has been quite a journey in my own life. But it's been a journey with my cigar kind of life as well.
Okay. Is Cigars with M, is that a carryover of Moments with Michelle? Because I noticed on your Instagram, you leave a lot of very inspirational messages on there. Is that different, Cigars with M, as compared to Moments with Michelle?
So Moments with Michelle is actually the name of my company, my cigar education company. And so I named it Moments with Michelle LLC, which is why my Instagram is called Moments with Michelle. I named it that because even though I am, you know, heavily in the cigar industry and have a cigar education show, I do try to put little glimpse of things outside of cigars as well, that really give you kind of that moment with me. So sometimes I need encouragement or I have a good word. So I want to make sure that I'm also sharing that with the world, because there are people out there that may be going through something or, need a positive word to be said to them. So I try to be a good, kind of a good influence in that standpoint.
I enjoy it every time I see it. I think I read
Thank
them almost
you.
Daily. Yeah, I think I read them almost
I really
daily.
Appreciate that.
there's a few times I put something up there because I was like, man, she's saying this. Let me put some like leadership stuff up here. Let me put something
yeah,
up there.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. You
so,
should.
So yeah, no, you definitely hit the nail on the head with that inspiration.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. They always say you got to be the change that you want to see in the world. So if I want the world to be positive, I got to put positivity out there.
Love it. I love it. So how did you get into the world of cigars? What's your journey into the world of cigars?
So I started smoking cigars in 2018. Okay. And I actually asked my dad on my 23rd birthday to teach me how to smoke cigars. It was very interesting because he was like, are you serious? Like, are you sure? You could ask me anything, but you asked me how to teach you how to smoke cigars. Now, mind you, I also was graduating with my second degree and my birthday was the same week. And so I had already asked him to come visit for the week to spend time with me. And then I said, oh, you know, I really want you to teach me how to smoke cigars. And him and my uncle have been smoking cigars all my life. So that's pretty much all I know. And he was very hesitant about it because I'm his baby.
Right.
And so, you know, he was just like, I'm not really sure about that. You know what I mean? But he took me to a local cigar shop in Mobile where I lived at the time. And he kind of walked me through the humidor a little bit to give me the basics and then let the tobacconist speak. And we settled down on a groovy blue Tatiana.
Ooh, okay.
And,
okay.
So it was very interesting because probably maybe the first 2 years of me smoking, I was smoking flavored cigars. And then from there, I haven't smoked anything that has been flavored. And yeah. because even then, like, even, you know, in those first 2 years, I was still trying out every single thing that was given to me. And right. I was trying other things, going to different cigar shops as well. So I wouldn't say I was solely smoking flavor sticks, because I really wasn't. I was trying everything. I found myself being very fond of cigars and kind of the lifestyle and the science behind it. I thought it was very cool that someone is spending their time rolling the cigar. This is their career. This is what they're doing to feed their family. Like, the whole science behind how many filler, binder, and wrapper leaves you know, it takes to be rolling a box of cigars, or how many filler and binder leaves it takes to roll one cigar. So all of those little pieces in between, and, you know, the science behind what it takes for you to actually, you know, put the seed in the ground and other crops around it, and just really, so I really dove like right into it. I'm one of those people that if I like something, I nerd out about it. And so I really completely nerd out about cigars. And so that's kind of how we're here, because, you know, all that research and knowledge and years of doing events and speaking with people and meeting cigar manufacturers and cigar company owners and retailers,
yes,
and kind of building those relationships, it kind of pushed me into, okay, now we need to do something, you know. And there are people that are kind of in my circle that also said the same thing. So that's where the show kind of came from.
Nice.
Yeah, no, I, yeah. You want the knowledge. You have all the knowledge. Why not share it?
Right, absolutely.
Thank you for sharing. Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with all your found knowledge, because if you're anything like we are, you're interested in something, you go all in, right?
Right.
So what do you, now that you got a little bit of experience under your belt, what do you look for in a cigar? What is your, like, what would be your go-to cigar?
So I think for me, I'm very much so one of those people that I like to try anything I have not had. Okay. So when I go into the store, I have, you know, certain brands that I will, you know, automatically, if I know that I may not see anything that I haven't tried in that particular cigar shop, I will then gravitate to two different brands. So like a Fuente or a Plasencia, maybe a Punch. Those would be like the three kind of brands that I would kind of lean towards, as far as the heritage brands. But in regards to like boutique, I'm very much so wanting to try all of the different types of cigars, all the different brands. I try to give, you know, each cigar at least two tries, because I think like if you just stick with brands, you know, if you stick with brands and you say, oh no, I'm not gonna ever try that brand anymore, I tried it once, I didn't like it, but yeah, you know, you haven't tried every single every single shape of that cigar that they have, or every single blend, so you can't just like discount that. You can't just, you know, right, oh, I'm not gonna do this, unless you have, you know, a relationship with maybe the cigar company and you're not very fond of the person who has a cigar company, then that's a different story. But, you know, you want to make sure that you give everybody an opportunity, because the cigar business is definitely, it's a hard business, and
yeah,
it's not easy for people to just come up with their own cigar and go through the blending process and go through the process of having the cigar rolled and the different shapes and the different sizes. All of those things matter, and it's not easy. So I feel like, you know, you should give everybody at least two tries.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you know, unless you have a problem with that owner or that, you know, for that cigar brand, because I went to Vegas and I got to tell you, they are not huge fans of Steve Saka out there.
Really?
I walked into like three humidors.
At least three, yeah.
And I was like, hey, do you guys got any Dunbarton? And we don't sell Dunbarton. We don't like Steve Saka. I was like, what? Are you serious?
You know, like, what? Yeah, I also think there's a lot of pretentious people sometimes. You know, you, like, I experience it being a woman. So, you know, I know that everybody has their own, like, I'm sure you've experienced some kind of pretentiousness with people. You know, it could be that, you know, you like a certain type of cigar, and it may be a little less on the spectrum of cost than somebody expects you to be smoking. Or it could be, you know, you're smoking a pipe and they're smoking a cigar, or you're smoking a cigar and they're smoking a pipe. You know, it could be a whole bunch of different things. But I will say, there are pretentious people out there. And so
yeah,
I think that everybody should smoke what they want to smoke, and they should pay what they want to pay. Right. And we should all just be happy that we have cigars, because, you know, cigars could not be here, you know, and thank God we have the PCA and all the other organizations that helped with the passing of the FDA, you know, getting off of our backs with cigars and being able to separate us, right, and being able to separate us from, you know, from everything else, and it's just be premium cigars, you know what I mean? And so it's a blessing to be able to smoke a cigar, because it could be that we don't have cigars and we live in a country that will not allow us to smoke cigars, which would be so unfortunate. I'd have to move. I'd have to move. So it's a blessing to be able to have cigars. So, you know, when you have those people who say like, oh, I don't like this, I don't like that person or whatever, you know, it's unfortunate, because I feel like, you know, in life you may or may not like people, which is cool, but you don't have to be ugly about it, because you never know who you're talking to, and you never know who knows that person. And, you know, that could be your business that you have on the line, because you never know who that person knows. So you have to be really careful with things like that.
Yeah, it was just funny that we walked in and nobody had them, and they were upset that I even asked.
Wow. I hate that for you.
We walk right back out.
Yeah, we just left. We were like, all right, well, later. And they're like, you're not going to look in the humidor? No, I don't need to. I was in the mood for either a Sin Compromiso or a Sober Mesa or something like that. And I was like, I was just, that the mood struck me. And so I was like, hey, this is what I want. And we don't have it. Then I was like, you know what? If you're going to be rude about it, I'm just going to walk out. I'll take my money somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, it's also just too, I think it's, as a retailer, I'm sure it's difficult to get something that every single person likes, but I also think that, you know, you have to have some hospitality. So if you are having a customer who's coming in and saying a certain brand that you don't have, it may be that you take the opportunity to show them another brand that may either similar.
Right.
Or and I would have been okay with that. Right. Because the thing is, like, you know, hey, I really appreciate you coming into the shop. Sadly, we don't offer this brand. However, you know, this is a cigar that maybe is made in the same factory, or this is a brand that, you know, is similar. Absolutely. I mean, and this is me, not, you know, because I'm not a saleswoman, but this is just like hospitality in me. You know what I mean? Because I went to school for it. So also just like, you have to be able to give people other options. When you're in the cigar industry, you got to be smart about how you carry yourself and who you talk to and how you talk to people, because you don't know who that person knows in life, period, but especially in the cigar industry, because it will make or break you.
Yeah, 100%.
And we would have been okay if they said, hey, we don't carry Dunbarton. However, we have all these other great brands to choose from. I probably would have found something there I liked. I like a lot of different brands. It just so happened that I wanted that one. But if they were like, oh, no, sorry, we don't carry that, but we carry X, Y, and Z, I'd have been like, ah, good. All right, I'll find something here I like. But no, they were just rude, so we just left.
Wow. That's so crazy. I hate to hear that, because that's definitely not cool. Because, you know, you want to make sure that you're telling people or giving people good hospitality, because you never know who is going to tell someone, hey, don't go to that shop because I had this bad experience. Like, word of mouth is, it could be good time for you or it could be bad for you.
Well, it's an experience, right? Like, going into a cigar lounge is an experience. And absolutely. It's, you know, you go into a burn, right? Like, there's a burn in Oklahoma City. I've been in it. It's a wonderful experience. You go in there, it's super comfy. It's like a old school study, it feels like. And I was like, oh, this is a cool vibe. I like this experience. So you kind of got to sell people on that if you're a cigar lounge. I'm sure you traveling around all over the country have been in tons of different lounges.
Absolutely. I've done shows in tons of lounges too. Yeah.
what's your favorite? What's your favorite lounge or your favorite like cigar experience or something like that? Or you know, what would you think is like your number one?
Okay, so I get to brag a little bit. I have what I would say top two. Well, top three, really. Okay. Three. So these are not in any order, because I would do that. But I would say top three. They're not. I can't do that. No. Okay, so Georgetown Tobacco, which is in Washington, D.C. Absolutely love all of them. They're all like family. Mr. David has been, it'll be 60 years in March that Georgetown Tobacco has been in existence, and it is a phenomenal shop. I actually did visit this past weekend, and it was great. It's always great. I love the fact that they have some really nice hand-painted mask in there. They have hats, they have canes, cufflinks. They have a ton of like wonderful luxury accessories, humidors. They have cigars from everywhere. Like, I mean, they have an amazing selection. The hospitality that as soon as you walk in the door, it's amazing. It's just, the experience is everything. Like, you have to go there to just experience it. When you go, please let me know, because I am only an hour and a half away and I'm happy to come meet you up there.
All right.
So
I'm gonna hold you to
please
that.
Let me know. Yeah.
I hear a Washington spot. Wizards and Georgetown Tobacco visit coming up, Dice.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we can make that happen.
Well, that was one. She got two more.
Right. Yeah.
Two more? Man, she sold me on that one.
So then the other one is Black Iris Social Club, which is in Richmond, Virginia. It is a great lounge. Very special, like more of like the specialty to like boutique cigars. There's Heritage Brands in there as well, but I love the fact that Dave, which is the owner, he really focuses on creating an experience for us. So there's, you know, a lot of different artifacts in there, like old typewriters and a piano and nice pictures on the wall. And it just, everything is just, it's all centered to make you feel good. Everything from the different chairs and the cocktail list and the bartenders, like one of the best bartenders in the city actually works there. And so we have, I mean, the amount of whiskeys, the bourbons,
the drinks that you can make, everything.
You know what I mean? Like there's so many different options for you. And I mean, just for me, it's like you go in there and you're going to get something that you've drink that you've never had before. You're going to smoke something probably that you've never had before. They have great views of kind of like the downtown Richmond area. And then there's different speakers like that you can hook your phone up to. So you can listen to music in each room, like different rooms.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow.
And it's just your experience, you know? So I will say like, that's, you know, that's another lounge that I really enjoy going to. And then I will say that the other lounge that I like to go to is Havana Phil's, which is in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I love Phil. He's the owner and just the whole team. They're amazing people. I love the fact that they have a Davidoff built out lounge. So like you have to just go there, but the bar is super nice. They have their own vodka, Havana Phil's vodka. You know, the Davidoff, like there is all these like special chairs and they have a really nice Davidoff selection and a really nice humidor. And I actually did my humidor etiquette episode in that humidor, and it's huge. They have a huge selection, always getting the new stuff, and just really great people. And so if you're ever in Greensboro or you're in DC or you're in Richmond, please go to these lounges because they are great. All of them are amazing, great staff and hospitality.
I'ma just say it sounds like the DMV area has a cigar lounge for everyone.
I mean, that's what they say.
Hey, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
I'm originally from the South, so yeah, that whole area you're talking about,
we call
DMV. That's our whole area. I'm originally from South Carolina.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm originally from Florida.
Okay. So, Southern, Austin's from the South too.
Yeah. We're all from the South.
Boom. I like it.
Take it.
Now, you got me all thinking about all these cigar lounges. So, you mentioned earlier, we had a victory with the FDA. By all means, I want everyone to know the fight isn't over. That was a good victory.
It was great, though.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a haymaker we landed.
Yeah.
The cigar
industry. DCA really did their thing.
With the cigar industry changing as much as it is, would you say the face of the industry is, as you see it today, is it changing for the better, changing for the good? Do you see... I know for me, I noticed when I was at TPE, it's not just I don't want to cause any arguments here, but it's not just a bunch of old white guys smoking cigars anymore. I'm seeing people of color. I'm seeing more females. I'm seeing all different kinds of backgrounds that are now enjoying these wonderful sticks of art here.
So to answer your question, I do believe that it's changing for the better. I will say that it's changing for the better because it's becoming more of a safer space. I know when I started smoking cigars in 2018, the space was not as safe as it is now for a woman to smoke cigars in a room with full of men, if that makes sense.
No, it makes plenty of sense.
Yeah, so if, like, for me, you know, I always try to be very safe in general, because even if I am, you know, having a cigar with somebody that I know, I still am very observant of my surroundings. You know, if I feel like this place may not be safe, I still go by those instincts. But right. I will say, when I first started smoking, it was a little bit more like, you smoke cigars?
Yeah.
You know, like why are you in here? You know, type of thing.
Hey, instead guys, of it being more, that's a girl in the cigar.
Right, exactly. And things like that were actually said. And so, you know, I think now it is a lot less. Like, I earlier this year, I was in a cigar lounge in Richmond. And it was funny because I've visited this cigar lounge many times. And this guy said to me, wow, I've never seen a woman smoke cigars before. And I said, wow, he was a really older guy. And I was just like thinking to myself, like, you must be under a rock. Like,
yeah, like, I was gonna say, he must not get out much. Like,
yeah, and I was just so surprised. I was just like, you've never seen a woman smoke cigars before? Wow, really? He said, yeah, I just think it's so fascinating. And you know, you really know what you're doing. And I said, yes, sir, I do. I'm a cigar educator. He's like, wow, you're a cigar educator. I can't believe it. And he was just so, like you would have thought that I was, like, gold. I mean, I am gold, but you would have thought that I was.
Of course.
Right. You have to have the confidence, right?
Yeah, of course.
You would have thought that I was literally, like, I mean, his long-lost cousin that he'd never seen before. You know what I mean? Like, he was very... He was,
but like, cutting
his mind.
You showed
right,
up.
Exactly. Right, I heard about you. I saw you in a picture, but I never met you before. You know what I mean? But no, he was very, very shocked to see me smoking a cigar. He actually purchased a cigar for me. He was like, I want to buy you a cigar because I just cannot believe that you smoke cigars. And I said, sir, I've been smoking cigars since 2018. Believe it or not, you know, women make up quite a big percentage of the
smokers today. Yeah, that percentage has been growing.
You know,
yes.
Right, absolutely. And he's like, wow, I just really didn't know that. You know, I had no idea. So it was very funny. It's one of those experiences. I just was laughing. Like, I was laughing inside. Obviously, I was very professional on the outside, but I was laughing inside
because
it was funny. Absolutely. So it was very interesting.
Is a guy buying you a cigar, is that like equivalent to a guy buying you a drink at a bar?
I would say no. The reason I say that is because, I would say no. I say the reason I say that's different is because I think in the cigar industry, it is kind of one of those untold rules that if you like someone in general, like you like their vibe, you guys are having a good conversation within the cigar lounge, you kind of exchange cigars. Like, that's a normal thing that happens. And so I think it's more of like, I'm not trying to talk to you like because I'm trying to get with you. It's more of, you know, I really think that you're a nice person and I really would like to give you a cigar. So I look at it that way versus, you know, I'm trying to holler at you. You know what I mean? Now, it's a difference if the guy is saying to me, you know, something different. But I think in this situation, the guy, the older gentleman, he was very just astonished that I actually was smoking a cigar and I happened to be a woman. So I looked at it more of like, you know, this is a peace offering.
There you go. Right? Yeah. There you go. I like it.
No. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, I've seen a lot of older gentlemen. My wife will go in with me to the lounges. She doesn't smoke, but she'll go into the lounges with me, and it flabbergasts the old men in there every single time. Partially because she's with me, and then partial is she drinks the exact same drinks that I do and shoots whiskey the same that I do. So she drinks old men under the table, and they just... They can't handle this, 5'10" girl just drinking them on the table. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. But so you talk about educating, continuing to educate, which I absolutely love.
Thank you.
So what advice what advice would you give somebody who's just starting to explore the world of cigars?
Like maybe a young female like yourself when you first started, or just anyone in general. But I mean, you're, let's just face it, your demographics, you walk into a humidor, you're a female, you're of color, and you're smoking cigars. So now you're obviously going to paint that picture for certain people. So what advice would you give to a new cigar smoker?
So I think my first thing would be to get the idea of the only brands are ones that are good. And the reason I say that is because you're new, so you're not sure what brands are good. So try them. You know what I mean? Like, because people will tell new cigar smokers, oh, this is a good brand. Have you smoked every single cigar from that brand?
No.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so don't get me wrong. I think that is good. Right. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, that's a great cigar. Actually, it was one of my first premium
it's a phenomenal cigar that was not
flavored. And so, you know, I think it's very interesting because the word good brand, or the phrase good brand, is subjective. And 100%. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be good and expensive. It could be good and relatively cheap. So you just have to be careful with that. That would be the first thing I would say. Just and to sum it up, it would be, as a new cigar smoker, you determine what you think is a good brand or a good cigar, not others, right? And the second thing I would say is, we legally are not allowed to have Cubans. So don't let people sway you when you go out of the country that you are getting a Cuban and you can bring Cubans back home with you. And Cubans are, you know, and the reason I say that is because I get the question all the time, where do you get the Cubans from? And I say to people, you know, I really like my life a lot. I really enjoy it. I think it's a great life. I think I am building a wonderful empire. However, if I were to get caught with a Cuban, I would be going to jail. And I'm too pretty to go to jail. Okay, I'm just gonna keep 100 with you. I'm absolutely too pretty to go to jail. So because I am, that means that I need to make sure I follow the rules. And I understand that, you know, we all have we want something that we can't have. But if you're gonna want to experience having a Cuban, probably should go there. It doesn't mean you have to actually, you know, come back with it, because again, we cannot have them. So unless you like to be put in jail, you should just go there, have the experience. Yeah. You know, and stop asking people where are the Cubans at.
Like, they're in Cuba getting sold for like hundreds of dollars a stick.
Right. And so if you want a Cuban, go to Cuba.
Yeah, it's funny.
And you will have a great experience.
It's hilarious because I see on Facebook and on Instagram, my buddy went on this cruise to Cuba and he brought back all these bejiques and stuff. And I'm like, one, those are fake because your boy paid $50 for a box and that ain't with it. So I can tell you
definitely not fake.
Right. Two, and there's no way that those should be in the country. Period. And I wouldn't be posting that on social media.
Right. Because the government watches everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so you want to be smart about how you operate. And then I would say the third thing is educate yourself. So don't just take the words from people that you hear in the shop. I think that you should take those words with a grain of salt, but also do that research for yourself. So like books like The Tobacconist Handbook. I Jorge, that book is one of the books that I use so much. It's an amazing book, and it breaks it down so easy for someone who's just starting, someone who's seasoned, someone who's in the industry. Like, I mean, it's a book for everybody. So it's definitely something that you should definitely read. I would recommend that book as like the book that you read before you read anything else. Because it's just got everything in there. And if you read it cover to cover, you'll learn more things, and then you'll be able to take what other people have told you and say, oh, okay, this is making sense now. Right. Watch videos of people do things, and or even put yourself in a position to maybe get your consumer certification with the Tobacconist Handbook. You know, the Tobacco University, they have a consumer, you know, certification. So being able to do that, there's just, and that's not something that you have to be a retailer or you have to be someone who's been in the industry for a long time. Like, even just as a consumer for your own knowledge, why not take the step of, this is something that you really enjoy, this is something that you are going to be doing often. Why not spend the time to educate yourself? Don't be a pretentious person who's smoking, who's telling people, oh yeah, no, you shouldn't smoke that, that's not a good brand, or oh, you should get a more expensive cigar because I only smoke these kind of cigars. Don't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, this is,
we're supposed to be family. This is the one thing, the one industry you can be in where it is not really quite important that you are a certain color or a certain height or a certain
income
build or, you know, or income. None of those things really matter. They shouldn't anyway. I will say they shouldn't.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
In some cases, you know, unfortunately, people think that those are things that should kind of tell you if this person is a good person. And I highly disagree, because I think that we should all be on the same playing field. We came to sit down and smoke a cigar wherever we are, whether it's outside or you're at a lounge or whatever. Like, it should be that we are actually here to enjoy each other's company, because we're coming for the same thing. Like, we're here for the same purpose.
Right.
Hence
the brothers of the leaf and sister of the leaf, because all that came into fruition because of what you just said.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and we've been to lounges, you and me, Dice, when we sat down and we started talking to people, and there was a garbage man, and he was sitting right next to a doctor smoking a cigar, and they were just chatting it up, having a great old time. You would have never known, but outside that lounge, you know, their circles would have never crossed. And you know, it's just one of those things that just brings everybody together. You know, I've sat there and smoked with so many different people, and we've been offered jobs, we've bought cigars, we've talked to so many people and learned about their lives, and it's just so much fun to sit there and talk to people and have a great time, have a cigar, have a drink. You know, it's just always a great time.
It is indeed. And you meet some of the best people, or people that may be the closest to you, are the folks you just meet randomly in a cigar lounge. Or you're outside somewhere and they happen to smell that you're smoking a cigar, and they're like, oh, you're smoking a cigar? I'm gonna light it up. It's a call. Like, it's like I put my hand in the air and everybody knows, like, this is cigar time.
I did that at a wine festival. I was sitting there and I was walking around trying wines, and I like perked up and I started sniffing the air, and my wife's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I smell a cigar. I know I smell a cigar.
Yes.
And I turned around, and there was a dude, and he just had a cigar, and it was like a drone in his mouth, and he just started waving his hand at me. I was like, you make me want to smoke a cigar so bad right now. I was like, I have one if you want. I was like, do you mind? He's like, not at all. I was like, oh, you're the best.
Right. Absolutely.
That happened to us at that football game right before the Raiders game.
Yeah.
Smoking a cigar before we went in, and the number of people that passed by was like, oh, that is such an awesome smell. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, it's favorite best smell in the world. And we're like, heck yeah, man.
It is. Oh. It is indeed. And you can smell it like from a mile away. Like, literally, you could go somewhere and you're sniffing the air. I think we all do it as cigar smokers. We'll be sniffing the air and we're like, oh my God, somebody's smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
You got to find this cigar. I got to find this person.
I didn't even know we could smoke here. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Because, like, I kid you not, I'm that one that carries cigars in her purse all the time. I'm always
there. Ain't no shame in that game. There's no shame in that game.
I literally believe that if you're always ready, like, it's, I mean, at any given time, like, you don't have to, like, there's no struggling. Like, I literally just, we can smoke here? Oh, bet. Say less.
Oh, boom.
Say less.
I got it.
Like, I got you. Okay, you need a cigar? Oh my God, I carry four.
I'm going to change our conversation just for a second. All right. So I'm going to kind of put you on the spot a little bit. So we normally, in our cigar episode, we normally talk about our first third of our cigar. I am there now. I'm just curious. Are you at your first third of your cigar?
So I'm actually on the second.
Okay. Well, we can talk about the first. We can talk about the second. What flavor profiles would you say you're getting from your cigar?
So I would say for the first third of this cigar, it was more of like a citrus type of taste, and it could also be very I think for me, because I had something earlier that was citrusy, I think it's coming out in the cigar as well. Like, it's giving me that like citrus kind of like honey taste.
Okay.
It is woody, which is great, and I love a woody taste in a cigar. So I'm getting like the citrus woody flavors. In the second third of the cigar, I'm still getting the honey and woody flavors. The citrus is kind of going out. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm almost to the third, the last third. What about y'all?
All right. Well, I can talk about my first third. I'm just entering my second. I guess I'm a slow smoker, or the cigar was a little heavier. I'm getting earth. Like, earth is big time in the first third. There's backhand, mm-hmm. some sweet cocoa. And I always get like a dried fruit kind of undertone, but I count that towards my Hennessy, because my Hennessy could be bringing it out on the tobacco.
Yeah.
And cedar is definitely building up, so I know my second third is going to be cedar.
Yeah. Are you a fan of cedar?
I don't mind cedar. What I don't like is a heavy cedar. Like, it's nothing but cedar. I don't want a cigar that's nothing but cedar. Now, I don't have a problem with cedar, but if that's the only flavor profile I'm getting from a cigar, I might not pick up so many of them. I'm not going to turn them away, but it wouldn't be something I would seek out. I don't want a nothing but cedar cigar. I want more. Okay. I want those notes. I want the cocoa notes. I want the earthy notes. I want the sweetness from the tobacco notes.
Do you retrohale or do you smoke traditionally?
It's an ongoing thing, because I am not good at the retrohale. I know how to do it. I'm just not a fan of it. And normally when I retrohale, I normally get that white pepper, or a lot of times it's a more of a spicy, pepperish kind of tone to it. And it's a little harsh for my nasal cavity. So that Austin laughs at me almost every time. If I do it, sometimes I cough. It's okay.
Meaning he's a wimp.
You said it.
I wouldn't say that. Well, I wouldn't say that, because honestly... So I had someone, side note, I had someone ask me about doing an episode on retrohaling. And I, you know, kindly just told him that I can't do that.
That's such a hard topic to talk about.
Because, right, it is. Because I think for me personally, it's just, it doesn't work well with me. I have allergies. It also is not good for your nasal cavity. And so... because those things are not positive, I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't put myself in that, you know, space. Now, if you want to, then you can do that. But it's also just like, I have to think about my audience. So if I'm doing that, then I'm encouraging people to hurt themselves. And that's not okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you could do it, try to do it, and then you are hurt. And then you want to tell me that I told you to do it, and that's not right.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? But some people do it and they love it, you know. But I tried it one time and I said, "Oh no, I'm good. I like my nose."
Well, see, I do it, and it allows me to pick up a lot of nuanced flavors. Like out of this one, I'm getting some leather and a little bit of cedar. As soon as I retrohaled, I get baked bread.
Oh, really?
It's a baked bread type smell, like something just came out of the oven, like an Italian type of bread almost. It's perfect. But it allowed, like, I didn't pick that up on just a normal inhale, a normal puff. It, like, I had to retrohale, and then I was like, oh, there's a subtle hint of baked bread in there. All right, cool. Now I get it. But I do it so sparingly that, you know, it's one of those things. I just do it. I'm like, I'm not getting a whole lot of flavor from this, or man, this is kind of getting monotonous. I'll only see what I get on the retrohale, and it allows me to kind of, there's my olfactory senses. Let me get those engaged, and now maybe I smell something a little bit different, or I taste something a little bit different, and it kind of makes it can make the cigar a little bit more deep for me.
Yeah, and I have friends that do Rachel Hill, and I say, you know, bless your heart.
You are from the South. You are from the South. Me, I got it right there.
I can't, you know, I won't be. Not me, not Michelle. Yeah.
So do you pair, right, with your cigars? Do you have a pairing that you go with?
So I do pairing events as a service. And then I also do have some kind of like go-to pairings. Actually, an episode on this. I love elderflower liqueur. So I like to pair cigars with that. And I also like to pair cigars with ginger beer. Those are probably my two top things. But I do also like sparkling water, or club soda, same thing. But I like
just straight club that. Soda.
Well, I do like club soda by itself, or I will have the bartender add like maybe some cherries to it, or maybe just some lime juice. It gives the cigar like it gives you the taste of like it's just freshness, so it doesn't overpower the cigar itself, and you can actually still taste all of the notes that you would need to taste without it overpowering, and it cleans your palate, at least for me. I can't speak for everybody else, but I can only speak for me.
Right.
But no, I can see that. I can 100% see that. I only drank Hennessy. Hennessy, if you listen to every episode, that's going to be Hennessy.
Yes, every episode you see that you drink Hennessy. Yeah, I think VSOP once and the traditional Hennessy, and you know, so yeah, absolutely. I listened to a couple of episodes and I kind of picked that up very easily.
He did try. He tried beer one time. I'll say two times just for deference to Dice there. But he tried beer one time and he bitched about it the entire episode.
Really?
He whined about how bad the beer was the entire episode.
Have you tried cider? Have you tried cider?
I have not.
So I like ciders. Well, just cider in general. So like I mean, hard ciders, yeah, but I like ciders in general. I love a good cider, and I have found that having it with a cigar is not a bad combination either. Now, obviously, you're gonna get some like crisp apple taste in the cigar as well, but you definitely are going to have a good taste, if that makes sense.
All right. Yeah. Well, I will definitely try it, and when I try it, I 100% will tag you in it and let you know my thoughts.
Yes, please.
He's gonna complain
the
entire episode again.
I'm not gonna do that.
I mean, I think that you should definitely try it when you're not doing the episode, just so that you don't have to make anybody upset because you are trying it and you may not like it.
I love it. So, you said you went to PCA, right? This year, or you're going to go this in March?
Oh, so I
went to PCA TPE. Just happening this year.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I went to TPE and I also went to PCA this year.
So what were your thoughts on the PCA or the TPE, whichever one you want to talk about?
Either one. So I really loved my experience from TPE. I think it was a great time. I enjoyed the fact that I got to see a lot of familiar faces that I already knew, and then get to meet a lot of other people there. I did some featured cigar accessories and cigar company episodes there at TPE, which was great. It was nice to see that kind of response from my audience as well, because they were very used to me just kind of doing episodes and not doing more of like having other people speak. So I wrote a script for each company that I was featuring. And then I had either the owner or kind of someone from that team speak about the company. So it was really nice. I really had a great time doing that. And then for PCA, had an amazing time. I love the team from PCA because I get an opportunity to see them very often because I live close. And it was nice to see, again, some familiar faces, but then meet a lot of other people, a lot of people that I looked up to in the industry. I was able to meet them, and, you know, some of them were very aware of who I was, which was even more like, oh my gosh, you know who I am. You know,
yeah,
you know,
great, it was really, right?
Nice. Yeah, it was amazing. And then, you know, it was nice for me to be able to do an interview with Futamora. And for those who are not familiar with Futamora, but Futamora makes the cellophane that we have on our precious cigars. So they actually are the company that makes primarily for everybody, you know, all the cigar companies that use Futamora as their company for cellophane. And so it's really nice that I got an opportunity to speak with them, because I also had Marco. Two people from Futamora were speaking in the interview, but Marco was the one that was doing the demonstration, and he actually lit the cellophane on fire to show that it is a renewable. Yeah, so it was really cool, because
that's cool.
You light it on fire and it doesn't it doesn't. It's not like plastic where, you know, plastic kind of shrivels up. It's wood pulp. So
yeah.
It's, you know, for being able to, you know, because some people are like, oh, it's plastic.
Yeah, everyone.
It's not plastic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so, plastic.
Right. And so it was really cool, because the demonstration kind of showed people, you know, hey, this is, you know, this is what we do. Like, the cigar industry is not, you know, some people think that cigars are so bad. Don't get me wrong. You know, there's some health risks there, but their health risks is with everything. So, you know, I think that being able to see another part of the industry, it just kind of is more of that other part of advocacy that we continue to push forward. So, like, you know, we have cigar educators like myself and other folks as well within the industry, and then you have cigar companies that are talking about how important their cigar company is and how they feed their families and you know, their team that they have, and then you have the retail side and the distribution side. So there's all these different sides that are advocating for the same thing. And then you have this other industry, other part of the industry that not only services the cigar industry, but services other industries as well. So it's like, this is really important, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
absolutely.
I really had an amazing time. And I think it was for me, it was a highlight of my PCA. There were lots of highlights that I had, but that was one of my highlights, of being able to do that interview and doing an episode on PCA, because they're, you know, again, my main audience is consumers. So being able to let consumers know about PCA and being able to kind of show them what PCA looks like. And it was really nice. I really enjoyed it. So I would definitely recommend for people within the cigar industry to go to both and enjoy both. Both of them have, you know, different visions in which they are kind of taking the industry by storm. And I think that, you know, it's not about, oh, this one's better or that one's better. I think, you know, it's based on your personal preference. And they both of them meet different needs, which is the beauty of that, because then you get an opportunity to meet people from different parts of the industry that may not be able to go to both. Maybe they're only able to go to one. So you're able to just have a great time. Two times a year in Vegas.
Right? Yeah.
So why not?
Oh, this has been great. I found you on social media, just navigating through my normal social media. Of course, I'm looking at cigar stuff, and you popped up on that. Do you have any advice for people out there that's trying to, I guess, do what you do in the social media? Would you say you're more of a cigar influencer and educator in the social media?
I like to stand alone and say that I am more on the cigar education side. I actually like to use the title cigar educator, and that's not to to down me being an influence, a positive influence in the industry, but it is just my main goal and vision and focus for my company is to be a cigar educator and to educate people about cigars. I know that that obviously comes with influence, but my primary, I think, focus is education. I really enjoy doing that, and I think it kind of sets me apart as well. I have my own kind of niche, and to have a company behind it, that kind of adds a little extra credibility to it as well.
All right, I like it.
I do too. Yeah, it's great. So you know, you say you're a cigar educator. Do you ever worry about running out of topics to talk about with cigar education, or what do you see your future becoming?
So I don't worry about running out of topics because cigars is always growing every day. And I think with the industry, it's evolving. So even if I talked about a certain topic broadly, maybe honing in on a certain aspect of what I spoke about still allows me to come up with a new topic. Because, you know, you may have someone say, like when I did how to light a cigar with a cedar. So
yeah.
I may then take that and say, what is cedar wood? You know what I mean? Like, or being able to break down, like, what is in the cedar? What are the different types of cedar that you can burn with? You know, so there's all different ways that you can kind of add additional kind of insight to that particular part of the industry. And I would say my future is very bright.
I agree.
thank you. I think that you have to manifest those kind of things. And I do believe that I am headed up and going to stay up and also be able to bring other people with me. So I think for me, it's just mainly staying focused to what I'm doing and staying true to myself, but also being able to continue to be a positive light within the industry. So meeting new people and connecting with them and educating them, and also being able to be educated myself. So I'm doing things like getting certifications, also being able to go to different cigar factories and farms to be able to get more knowledge so that I can bring that back to my audience as well.
I'm excited for the future, for everything the future has to bring for you, because obviously you're posting great stuff.
Thank you.
We love to see it. And I'm just excited to see what you keep putting out there and what you put out there next.
I really appreciate that. Yeah.
you definitely got two fans right here. If anything, you definitely
Thank
got
you.
Two fans. Yeah. I will continue. Maybe sometime in the future we can reach out and collaborate again. I appreciate everything that you're doing for the industry by all means. What's up, Austin?
I would say real quick, where can our listeners find you?
That's
on
exactly where
media?
I was going. That's exactly
okay,
where
good.
I was going.
I was
sir.
Making sure.
yeah.
Gotta give shout outs.
So,
plug all your
well,
stuff.
I
want
that.
Everyone following you. I want everyone to go there. All our listeners.
Yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, guys. It means a lot. I appreciate the support. So on Instagram, you can find me at Moments with Michelle, and it's M-E-C-H-E-L-L-E. And also on YouTube as Cigars with M. And on TikTok, it's Moments with Michelle with dots in between Moments and Michelle. And then on Facebook, it's Cigars with M.
Nice. Well, if you're not already following her, please go check her out, guys. She puts out a lot of great content. I'll be honest, I've been sitting here just surfing through old content that I haven't seen before while we've been talking, just to see what I've missed out on, and it's all just great stuff. I love every bit of it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to catch up. I did listen to some of your. You did an interview with Deep Cut Live.
Yes, that was recent with Antoine. Shout out to Antoine. Yes. It was a great interview, and I love Antoine. He's such a great guy, and he's got so much within the industry. Like, he's done so much in the industry. He worked for tobacco business and now works for PCA, and he's a great writer. And so if you're not following Deep Cuts Live, please follow Deep Cuts Live. He has great interviews with people all in the industry, all over the industry. And he really has, I think for me, he makes people feel very comfortable and able to speak about what they do and their part in the industry. And you learn a lot, honestly.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much kind of how what we want to do. We want people to learn from us. We want people to learn from watching, listening, not watching because we don't do watch, but listening. And man, we never stop learning. I've been paying attention to what you've been doing. I have never stopped learning. I will continue to learn. I wish nothing but great things for you in the future. Let me change that. I know there's going to be nothing but great things for you in the future.
Thank you.
I greatly appreciate you coming on air, having a conversation with Austin and myself. And I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure to speak with you all. And I really appreciate you guys reaching out. If there's ever anything that I can do to help you guys out, please let me know. I'm happy to help.
Absolutely, yeah, and we'll if we're ever in the Richmond area, we'll definitely hit you up and you show us around some of those great lounges that you mentioned.
Yes,
earlier.
Yes, definitely, will do.
All right, well, thank you so much, Michelle. And after this break, we'll start on some leadership topics, components of effective leadership, and we'll dive into that. Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. I'm just letting you know, if you want to see what kind of cigars that myself, Dice,
and Austin,
what we're smoking on each episode, check out our Instagram on Leadership of the Leaf. All one word.
At Leadership of the Leaf. And please leave us a comment. Send us a message with what other questions or what you guys are smoking on. Maybe you guys have some suggestions for us that we'd love to give it a shot.
At Leadership of the Leaf on Instagram.
Hey, it's Michelle from Cigars with M on the Leadership of the Leaf podcast with Dice and Austin.
All right, everyone, welcome back to Leadership of the Leaf. Before we took the break, we had Michelle from Cigars with M on. Had a wonderful conversation with her, Dice, I think.
Yeah, no, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
It was great. She's an awesome person. If you haven't found checked her out, please go check her out at her Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, whatever you want. Whatever your platform is, go check her out. She's awesome. She's a great person. So now we're going to dive into four components of effective leadership. So found a report in Purpose, People, and Progress. They interviewed nearly 300 C-level business leaders. So that's your CEOs, your CFOs, your COOs, all those type business leaders, right? Across the globe. And they cite these four components as being the components to effective leadership. They're leaders who lead by example. They have a clear purpose. They use clear communication, and they trust their employees. Those are the key elements that influence highly effective workplace cultures.
Yeah, those four elements, they're key elements that influence highly effective workplace cultures. They're four elements that that strengthen and build effective leadership skills. And once effective leadership has been established, the coveted workplace culture is amongst the top talent is looking and willing to follow.
Yeah, and no surprise from us, I think. These are components that we've talked about before, right? So leaders who lead by example, those are the guys who walk the walk, talk the talk. They're the person that you model the behavior you want to see in your team members, right? It's not a do what I say, not what I do type leader. They are the person who says, follow me, we're going to do this together because I'm right there in the trenches with you.
Right. They're the ones that get involved. They're the ones that, you know what, I know your hands are dirty, let me get my hands dirty right there with you, or their hands are already dirty and they invite you to join them. However you see it fit, They normally always put like their people first. It's that lead by example culture, and I've seen some leaders, they fall pitfall to this, where they're the leader now, so they're going to stick their hands in their pocket and they're going to look at the industry from afar. They're going to look at the workforce from afar and kind of dictate by pointing and saying or grunting. You don't want to be that leader. You don't want to be an armchair leader. You don't want to be one of those
armchair quarterbacks. Yeah, I've seen this, and what was coming up as a leader, as a new leader, I was getting my feet dirty and getting really just kind of into the leadership realm. Another guy who's right behind me, he became a leader, and so we're kind of co-running something. Whereas I was out there doing the work with people, he would literally stand off to the side with a bottle of Gatorade, sit there and watch and yell at them from the side about how they were doing X, Y, or Z wrong or correct or whatever. And it always kind of bugged me that I was just like, you're not out there with the people. What are you doing? Why aren't you out there with the people? And he thought just because he became a leader, he didn't have to do it. But he also tended to micromanage. So, you know, if you want to lead by example, you're out there with them. So if you're out there with them, you don't want to micromanage people because you got your own shit to deal with. So, trying to manage your team members on every little thing is going to lead to frustration, lack of motivation. We've already talked about this before. Don't micromanage. Usually the leaders who lead by example are flexible, right? They know what works, what doesn't. The best laid plans of mice and men don't always work out. They roll with the punches. They're good. They're there to support as a leader should be. And then they also shut the fuck up. And they listen to understand. Don't listen to respond or listen to reply. They listen to understand. If you tell them, hey, boss, sorry I'm late, I had a flat tire, and they cut you off and say, yeah, whatever, just hurry up and get to work, late again. And you're like, man, I was just telling you, I hit a nail on the way to work. I'm sorry I'm like 15 minutes late. I had to change a tire. Like, you know, the good leaders are going to sit there and go, hey, why were you late? Oh, man, I hit a nail on my tire. Oh, shit, you okay? How are you doing? Oh, yes. Yeah, it was great, but I had a scary experience with the semi coming down the road or something. You're like, oh, shit, man, I'm glad you're okay. Let me know if you need anything. All right, yeah, sure thing, boss. That's the person that you're going to want to work for. That's the person that sits there and goes, you're like, hey, I know that they're going to understand what I'm going through. Or, hey, sir, boss, ma'am, whatever. Can I take off early? I got to go take my kid to a dentist appointment. They're not going to sit there and go, why can't your wife do it? Why can't your husband do it? Why can't, you know, somebody else do it? Like, they're like, hey, got it. You got a family? Did you get as long as you got some work done, I'm happy. Just hit it hard next tomorrow. All right, sure thing, boss. Boom. Got it. That's the person I want to work for.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there. With a lot of the lead by example, I don't want people to be confused. I don't want someone to miss a coaching moment, because all coaching moments are helpful feedback. Good leaders always looking for a coaching opportunity. So if you see one of these coaching moments, just because you want to be flexible and you want to listen to understand and all the great things that come with leading by example, you also want to make sure you have those coaching moments by telling your team what you want them to do. Model the work ethic of what you want to see from your team members and your peers and everyone else, because coachable moments are part of that leading by example. Like, hey, I'm glad that you did it this way. That way works. Let me show you another way that can be done, because it's coachable. There's always coachable moments, and that listening is also another tool in your bag, as you were saying, because after that coach moment, they may share some feedback with you to why they do it the way they do it instead of the way you want it done to start with. And now you're both sharing information, and not only did you lead by example, you actually take his thoughts or her thoughts into consideration, because we're woke, into consideration, and you want to take that, and you can use that in your lead by example with other avenues also.
Yeah. Yeah, and who knows? You might get some constructive feedback. You know, if you're listening to understand, there might be a team member saying, hey, boss, I really don't respond when you yell or when you just give me direction. I really need something a little bit more in-depth. You're like, oh, shit, okay, cool. Like, Billy over here, he just gets it. He knows what the job is. I forget sometimes you're a newer person. Let me take you under my wing. You know, don't get defensive. Well, this guy can do it. Why can't you? Get defensive. Just say, hey, thanks for sharing with me. I did not know that about myself. I'm going to try to do better with you. Or, you know, I had a guy. I was in a leadership position, obviously, and there was somebody who came up, talked to me, and said, hey, boss, I'll call him Joe, right? Joe is really getting on my nerves. He's trying to fight me because he thinks I'm rolling my eyes at him. I don't understand, da da da. I'm like, oh, okay. Did you know, I said, that when you start talking, sometimes you have an eye twitch and your eyes go up and kind of to the side before you focus on somebody? And he goes, I did not know that. I literally held a mirror up to him. I said, start talking. And he did it. And he goes, oh, shit, I did not know that about myself. I said, so right. So to somebody, that might look like you're rolling your eyes. He goes, oh, okay. I had no idea. I said, let's go talk to Joe. And I talked to Joe. I was like, did you know that this is a facial tic he can't control? He goes, no, I had no idea. I thought he was just rolling his eyes at me because every time I try to correct him on something, he just, you know, that's how he responded. I was like, yeah, it's a tic. He can't control it. So, you know, he's not trying to be disrespectful, but I do have a problem with you trying to fight him. So let's hash this out right now. And come to find out, you know, it was a huge miscommunication because one person thought the other person was being disrespectful, and that wasn't the case. It was literally just a facial tic that he could not control. So it, you know, and I was like, I'm not trying to be rude or anything. I'm just trying to let you guys know there's a quadrant, right? You know, like, you're blind to certain things about yourself. I'm blind to certain things about myself, I'm sure. But you know, so once we kind of brought that to light, it was like, oh, okay, cool. Now I understand. And you know, it was a non-issue after that, because I was like, we quashed it, everything was great, and they moved on, and they were very effective and productive together. Another thing that leaders do is have a clear, concise purpose. Effective leadership is an indispensable aspect of any organization's success. It requires a range of skills and attributes, including the ability to communicate effectively, build relationships, manage resources, and make decisions that align with the organization's goal. But one critical attribute distinguishes successful leaders from others is having a clear sense of purpose.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just as simple as you want to provide direction. I want this wall painted red, as opposed to, hey, I need you guys to paint this wall, and you come back an hour later and it's blue. Now, if I said paint this wall red and then I come back, it's blue, obviously we had a communication breakdown because maybe they're colorblind, or I have no idea, but I know I said red. But boss, nope, you didn't say red. You just said paint the wall, and the first color we came to was blue, so we painted it blue. We knew you wanted it red, I would have painted it red. So, of course, if you provide clear and concise directions that provides them exactly what you are looking for, then you're going to get a better outcome, as opposed to being vague.
Right. It drives innovation. So leaders with a sense of purpose are more likely to be proactive and innovative. They're driven to pursue new opportunities that can advance the organization's mission. They take calculated risks to achieve their goals. Usually they're less satisfied with the status quo and continually seek to improve processes, products, and services to better serve their stakeholders.
Right. So you go back to the example of, I said paint the wall. Now, if I said paint the wall and I want you guys to use your best judgment of what color to pick, you got to remember the organization, our colors are red and, I don't know, black. And maybe they were like, you know what? We don't want to paint the wall black, so we're going to think outside the box and paint it red, maybe have little accents of black here and there. And that, I'm driving their innovation. I gave them exactly what I wanted, and I gave them a direction that I wanted them to go, but I allowed them to innovate which color they actually want to pick. And that also fosters a positive work culture.
Yeah, having a leader with a sense of purpose contributes to the positive work culture, because employees see their leaders acting with purpose. They're more likely to feel connected to the organization's mission, values, and this connection fosters a sense of belonging, which can lead to an increased employee engagement and motivation. And we don't have to tell you guys, engaged and motivated employees are more productive and more likely to contribute to an organization's success. If I said, hey, paint the wall, and you're sitting at Target, and they come back and they painted the whole wall blue, and you're like, guys, we're Target, not Walmart. Why the hell did you paint it blue instead of red? Like, right. You know? Oh shit, you're right, boss. Like, all right, cool. Let's work together and we'll paint this thing red and we'll get it all worked out. And we can have our accents of white or whatever the case the color is. You know, it's like, oh, okay, cool, got it. You know. They can kind of understand, like, hey, this is our purpose. Our purpose is to paint Target, to make the Target brand stand out more.
Right. So leaders who act with a purpose, as we was talking, they demonstrate that they are trustworthy and they have an organization and the stakeholders' best interests at heart. Hence the reason of your example that you're using Walmart and Target there. This builds trust and credibility, and they are essential for building strong relationship with customers, suppliers, and stakeholders, which can help an organization thrive in the long term. So another aspect of that clear, concise purpose is to build that trust and credibility.
Yeah, you know, if you got a guy that's wishy-washy, you know, you got a leader that's, it's a technical term, wishy-washy.
Wishy-washy.
You know, they're like, oh, just paint the wall, right? You know, stay with the same example. Oh, just, then you go, hey, can we paint it blue? And you're like, yeah, fuck it, sure, why not? And they come back and like, hey, man, I thought it was supposed to be red. They're like, what? You said blue was fine. Well, no, I clearly said red. Like, oh my gosh, like, why are you
this guy?
Make a fucking decision, man. If you wanted it red, just say fucking red and I'll go get red paint. But if you leave it up to me, I'm gonna fuck paint it blue because my favorite color is blue. Fuck you. Like, you know, you have to have that purpose and say, hey guys, paint this wall red. And the reason we're painting this wall red is because we're at Target, not Walmart. Ah, okay, cool. That makes sense. Got it, boss. Will do.
Right. Which leads to another effective point, which is clear communication. And by all means, if anyone has listened to this podcast, and if you're just now starting, communication is said, what, a trillion, billion times?
I don't know how many times we've said it, but communication is key in life. Right. Not just in leadership, in life. You think your wife is mad at you, maybe you should try communicating with her. You know, you think your kids are mad at you for whatever. Communicate. Don't just assume anything. Communicate. Develop a bond with somebody. Effective leadership is measured by the time it takes a team to complete a task without any friction. Good communication skills play that critical role that brings the team together to achieve desired results by clearly defining the goals and responsibilities. If you have the opposite, it's going to be tough to achieve anything because nobody knows what the fuck the goal is supposed to be.
Oh my God. Clear communication also builds trust. Trust binds the team together. An effective leader ensures that they undertake different activities to build trust amongst their team members. Clearly communicate responsibilities, build trust. All team members in a project beforehand avoid confusion, and it is promoting team trust.
Yeah. And it goes right back to active listening, right? Not listening to respond, but listening to understand. If you're an active listener, you can become an effective communicator. They should know when to shut the fuck up and when to listen to their team members. Usually by doing this, they gain the employees' trust, who then share their opinions, ideas, grievances, etc. Active listening helps the leaders understand their team better. Therefore, listening skills are just as important as communication skills for an effective leader. I would say that listening is a part of communication, because if all you do is talk, you're not communicating. You're just broadcasting a message.
And along with that communication, of course, you got to have clarity. Effective communicator has clarity in their thought, which transforms into the words that they use to instruct and interact with team members. Clearly defined goals can be fulfilled by the team members, and monitor if the team is successful and completing those goals by the end of the milestone. If a team members fail to meet their goals effectively, to simplify the goals to help employees understand them. A lot of times I'll say something and then I'm like, do you need me to say that in Dice Dummy terms? Because if you do, I can do that. No, boss, I got it. Okay, I just want to clarify what I said to you because I don't want any misunderstanding when I come in to check on your project.
Yeah, I always sit there and I'm like, I'll finish something. I go, did you understand all of that? And then I get the deer in the headlights look. I'm like, okay, which part did you not understand? And usually it's like, well, I got you up until here and then I kind of lost you. I'm like, all right, let's dumb it down. Let's really, like, I'll go point at something if I need you to. I'll draw you a little diagram because some people, they can't visualize very well. So I'll draw you a diagram, motherfucker. Like, this is how I want this to work. Does that make sense to everybody? And I don't move on until everyone, I get that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I understand. I get it. Another point other than clarity is empathy. If you're trying to communicate with somebody, you have to have empathy. Hey, you were 5 minutes late. Why were you late? Oh man, my kid was sick. And so he puked all over his bed and stuff. So I had to like throw the lawn, his bedding in the wash and get him cleaned up before I could get him on the bus. Like, you said, if what your leader goes, yeah, I don't really don't care. I need you to fucking be on time. That's not showing empathy. If you go, oh shit, is your kid okay? Do you need to take some time off? Do you need to go be with your kid? How's everything working? Is you need any help? That's showing empathy. Oh shit, man. Yeah, sick kid sucks, man. What can I do to help you? What can I do to make your life easier?
Right.
That's showing your empathy.
Yeah, and a lot of so-so leaders, they kind of glaze over that part. It's an important part because it kind of puts you in their shoes, or they get put in your shoes, however you want to word that. It allows you to kind of get a better understanding of their livelihood and their lifestyle. Another great effective point to clear communication is asking an open-ended question. And I actually do that quite often because I don't want to give you a multiple choice. I want to hear your actual response. Effective leaders push their team members to do their best. And in that process, they encourage them to ask open-ended questions. It helps develop a great bond between team members and their leaders. In addition, it helps leaders understand pretty much they and their thoughts and the goals of their team that they're leading. It's not just putting the assume or the assumption. Like, I don't want to assume or have an assumption about someone. I want to find out exactly what are they thinking, what makes them tick.
Yeah, if you sit there and go, hey, money motivates you, right? Oh, yeah. That's not an open-ended question. But if you ask, hey, what do you think you could do better? What do you think, why do you think your motivation was lacking? What could I do to better motivate you? You can get, people sit there and they'll spill their life stories to you if you ask open-ended question. Usually because people don't understand that they talk so much, because 9 times out of 10, they don't get a chance to talk. Everyone just asks yes or no questions or what's your right answer. They think that they're giving you the answer that you want to hear. So you ask a couple open-ended questions and people start spilling, and it helps you understand that employee just a little bit better. But that goes right into receiving and implementing feedback. If you ask that open-ended question, hey, what can I do to be better? What do you think we could do to make the team better? You have to sit there and be able to listen to the feedback and implement it. Hey, boss, I really don't like it when you yell at us. Okay, why? Well, it makes me feel a little small and it makes me feel unmotivated. Okay, what could I do better? Well, I'd really like it if you just talk to me like an adult and tell me exactly what you need to get done. Okay, I will work on that. Got it, and then you actually work on it. Don't just say, I'm gonna work on it and then don't ever do it.
Right, and that goes to transparency. Transparency plays a crucial role in breaking down the communication barrier between leaders and teams. It's believed that many leaders and managers and executives hardly know anything about their organization. Which is, if you have clear transparency, then they will know that it's different. As a result, they are unaware of the organization policy and goals, which leads to low efficiency and productivity. By speaking openly about the company's goals, and that builds trust between the employees and themselves. Because a lot of times, some people do things because that's just because they do things. We've always done it this way. Well, transparency will show that we have to do it this way for legal purposes, or we have to do it this way because if not, OSHA gets involved. Like, however, this transparency in your communication will pay dividends.
Yeah, you know, it kind of goes back to that. There's a question that sometimes floats around. Do you let people know if layoffs are coming as a leader? If you're privy to, hey, the company's going to cut 10 people off your team, Dice. Do you let your team know that they're going to get cut by 10 people? If you're transparent, yeah. Because then you can give those people a heads up. Hey, guys, there might be some cuts coming down. I don't know who they're going to cut, but I was told that there's a good chance that our team is going to shrink by 10. I'm trying to not have that happen, but I just want to be upfront and honest with everybody that you don't want to sit there. There's, you know, you don't want everybody stopping and looking for a new job and not doing the mission. But, you know, you don't want to sit there and have somebody go, hey, 10 of us just got fired. Dice, did you know about that? And you're like, oh yeah, I found out about that 2 months ago. Like, what the fuck, man? You couldn't let us know and so we could find new jobs? Like, I didn't want to let everyone know because I didn't want everyone to quit.
that's a strong one. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a hard one because there's that concern, right? You know, you don't want everyone to quit. You don't want anyone to go move on to find different jobs, but you also don't want to fuck somebody over if they are going to get cut. And you know, be out on the street with no time to prepare. But if you gave them a couple months heads up, maybe they could go find a different job.
Another effect of the communication department is body language, which I think is something that people really don't pay that much attention to. It's a nonverbal action or behavior that also plays an important role in that communication. It's believed that nonverbal cues are an important part of effective communication. Therefore, a leader must work on their body language and nonverbal cues while interacting with their team to ensure that their message is rightly conveyed to the team members. Because if I go in and be like, hey, everyone, what's up? What's going on? I just want everyone to know there's going to be some layoffs coming on. Like, what? Why are you excited about that?
Yeah.
Why are you waving your arms around?
You don't care about
us anymore. You're smiling and you're smiling from ear to ear about this, and your eyes show gleefulness, as opposed to if I come in with more of a sullen tone and, you know, my arms may be slightly folded, and maybe I'm looking down just a little bit because I don't want to lose any of my team members.
Right. Yeah, it goes a long way to going, oh man, this guy doesn't give a shit about us. No one wants to work for you anymore. And then versus you come up with a sullen tone, like, oh man, this guy cares. He actually gives a fuck. Like, I hope I stay working for him because he's a great boss. You know, it's the same thing. Or if you're sitting there and you're just yelling and you have spittle at your mouth and you're angry and all this stuff, like, good fucking job. Man, fuck yeah, God, yeah. And you're like, man, is this dude angry or is he happy that I did something? Like, I don't know what to say anymore. Yes. It's that there's the tone, there's the how you move your hands, what your face looks like. You know, and so there's a lot of people I've met that are like, well, I can't change my face. Yes, the fuck you can.
Yeah.
Practice in the fucking mirror. Because, you know, like if you have an important message to deliver and you practice in the mirror and you're like, oh man, I would have taken that a completely different way, the way I just said it. Let me work on it before I have to address my team members. You know, there's things you can work on. How you move your hands, how you hold yourself, what facial expression you have. You could be really excited, like, hey, we're going to have layoffs and, you know, I get to choose the layoffs. So I get rid of the worst people on my team. You don't want to sit there and say that and be grinning from ear to ear because that's going to convey the wrong message. But right. If you're like, hey, guys, I don't know how to tell you this, but, you know, I was told that we're going to have some layoffs coming in the future. I was told to cut the team by 10%. You know, I this is going to be a really hard decision for all of us. You know, I don't know how or when the decision's going to be made. Or if you do, then you can say, hey, I'm in a really tough spot. I have to cut 10% by the end of the month. I'm sorry. It's just business. There's no hard feelings. If you guys need any references, please let me know. You know, I'm happy to work with everybody. It could be your worst person that you just don't like having that person on your team. But if you come in with that tone and that body language, people are going to go, oh, all right, cool. He actually gives a fuck. And you know, it makes it a little bit easier.
So that leads to the last of the four, which is trust. Trust is something that is obviously is going to be earned. You got to create a positive relationship with your team. There are a number of ways to do this by including helping employees cooperate, resolving conflict, you know, just giving honest feedback and checking in with people about their concerns. You can demonstrate your expertise and judgment with your team members. And once they actually know that they can trust you, it's going to build a much more effective team. And, you know, people aren't going to try to hide things from you. And that's one thing I hate when I was in a certain leadership roles is I didn't want my employees, I didn't want my team members, I didn't want them hiding anything from me. I want them to be able to come to me with anything. And the only way I can do that was developing that trust. And there's quite a few ways to develop that trust. And one is to be a good role model.
Weird. That's like number one for an effective leader.
Right.
Weird.
Lead by example. Leaders are good role models when they can demonstrate how their vision impacts the world and those working towards that vision.
Weird how that works. Another one, you can tell the truth, right? No matter how hard. We just talked about communication, empathy. No matter how hard or uncomfortable it is to tell the truth, you should always tell the truth. People are more likely to trust you and to follow you. You know, if they find out you hid layoffs from them for 2-3 months, even the people that stay are going to go, I don't know how much I want to work for this guy. If he's sitting here hiding stuff from me, how can I trust him? I don't know if more layoffs are coming and I'm going to get fired next. But if you came and said, hey, this is what's happening. Here's what I know. I'll let you guys know more. Then people are going to go, okay, cool. He understands. He knows what's coming. All right, cool. We got it. You know, I'm going to trust in my leader. We're going to make it work. You know, be part of that team. Demonstrate loyalty to your team. Defend your team when needed. And provide a buffer if things aren't delivered in a timely manner by giving a justifiable reason as to why they weren't delivered in a timely manner. On the opposite end of the spectrum, if things go well, praise your team to upper management. Let as many people as possible know how hard your team works. This can make both you and your team look great, right? If you're supposed to give a presentation that your team delivered or built, let me rephrase that. If they built the presentation and you delivered it, then and your boss says, hey, Dice, great job on this presentation, way to go. And you're like, yeah, it was all me. Everything was all me. It was so easy. It was great. I'm so happy to be, you know, part of this organization. That's not, you know, telling your team, being part of the team. That's not giving them the credit that they're due. They're going to hear about it, guaranteed. But if you say, hey, sir, yep. I'm happy that you liked the presentation. My team worked really hard on this. All I did was present the material that my team put together for you.
Yep.
And this is the picture we wanted to tell. All right, sir, got it. They're going to hear about that as well. There's no secrets.
Yeah. Being transparent is like you were saying earlier, being truthful and all that. So when people actually come and they ask, hey, Dice, I have a question. If the answer is going to be tough, scary, or whatever, I make sure I precursor it. Like, you sure you want to know the answer? Because I'm going to tell you the truth because I'm going to be completely transparent about what's going on.
Right.
And normally they're like, oh, yeah, we want to know the truth of what's going on. Okay, well, here's the truth, guys. I talked to upper management. There's going to be about 10% layoffs. I'm kind of stacking and racking right now to see who wherever we can trim some fat from. I'm going to try to keep as many. But I mean, I'm being transparent about that. Hey, there are layoffs coming and you ask me and I'm telling you the truth. So don't be a baby back bitch about it when I tell you the truth.
Yeah, like especially if they come up, hey, do you know if I'm going to have a job next month? And it's your worst performer, I'll be like, look, man, I'm just going to be honest with you.
I'm racking and stacking. But right now, you're on the cut line. You're below my cut line. There's a good chance that I'm gonna have to cut you. And this has nothing. This is nothing personal. Nothing like that. It's purely just. It's purely business. There's nothing else I can say about it. If I could keep you, I would. If you give me another reason, I will. I can keep you. I'm happy to fight for you. But I'm going to try not to leave you high and dry. I'm going to try to see if I can't get you moved over to a different section. Something like that. And you just say, hey, this is where I'm at. You know, people are going to go, oh, man, that really sucks. But I understand. They might get mad. They might scream, yell, whatever. But at the end of the day, they're going to go, well, at least he told me the truth. At least they gave me a heads up. Or if you know, hey, I can't keep you. I got to trim fat. This is not anything wrong with you. It's just the way of the business. I suggest you start looking for another job. If you need reference, I'm happy to give it for you. You know, something like that. They're going to, you know, they might get mad, but they're going to appreciate what you're trying to do for them in the end. The last one is don't micromanage. Trust that you hired the right people to get the job done. If your team is left to perform on their own, they're likely to feel a greater sense of proprietorship. Team members often need to feel like they have a purpose, a cause, and a goal to achieve to be a part of the organization. It may not be enough to do what they're told without asking why, how, what, and when. They may need to feel that they're being seen and heard. You can get another level of effort from them and encourage them to trust you if you show that you can trust them, because trust is earned, not just given. Same thing with like respect is earned, not given. So you have to show your team that you can trust them and they can trust you.
Right, and we just went through the four components of effective leadership, and I just want everyone to understand that this was a report for purpose, people, and progress. You can go online and review that report. And when you do review that report, you're going to see that there was a whole list. I mean, there was a list of plethora of things on there. But the top four, the ones that was always answered over and over and over, like if this was Family Feud and the survey says, these would be the top four. And that's leaders who lead by example, a clear purpose, with clear communication, and trust. So those are the effective top four components done by the CEO levels of leadership when they took like the survey.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're all stuff we've said before, guys. There's nothing really new here, but it's something that's so important that, you know, it bears repeating. So take that into consideration. If you are ever curious about where you stand, go talk to your people. Go ask them. Ask for that feedback. They will tell you, hey, how do you think I'm doing as a leader? Well, actually, boss, it would really be beneficial if you could XYZ. Like, ah, shit. Yeah. Okay, I didn't think about that. All right, yep, I'll do better. Then go do better.
Right. I know you said it. We talked about these things. We talked about them over and over and over again. Reason why this became a topic is because I know we speak on a lot of these things. This is kind of, you know, proven that we actually know what we're talking about, because this is an actual report that was given out. And when I was reading, I was like, this is great, because this is exactly what our leadership topics are about. We're hitting home. This is kind of a measure to our success of what we actually been preaching the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely. So to end, what is your final third like?
Oh, I was waiting for that question. Huh. Oh, my final third.
Here for now, you.
I am. I'm happy to share.
Are you?
That, are you? Yeah. Yeah. Because I was speaking of cedar, and cedar is definitely coming through more on the cigar. It's not a bad thing. It wasn't overpowering with cedar, but cedar definitely moved to the forefront near the end of the cigar, which makes sense because it started funneling down. I still had that great earthy tones to it with a tobacco sweetness. I did retro inhale, contrary to popular belief, and there was pepper there. I would call it more of a white pepper, but overall, it was a great, great cigar.
Yeah. That's good. I'm happy. So for my final third, the leather came through a little bit more. There's still a little bit more spice, and that cedar started really showing up towards the back end. It was good. As far as box worthy single or five pack.
Ooh.
I don't know. I had some draw problems. It was tight at the beginning. You saw me. I had to use the draw tool at the beginning. I pulled out like a whole stem. I wouldn't be upset if I got two or three of these. I don't know that I would go whole full five pack. I'd probably go to like two or three and reevaluate from there.
All right. I would definitely, for mine, I would definitely lean towards a five pack. I wouldn't necessarily buy a box. I liked it enough to where I would enjoy having it in my humidor so I can smoke freely again, as opposed to, you know what, I only got one of these left. I'm going to smoke that. So I'm going to go with five pack for mine.
All right. Nice. Well, this has been another wonderful episode of Leadership of the Leaf. Again, it may be a little bit long. We apologize for that. We were just having so much fun talking to Michelle from Cigars with M, and then talking to you guys about our leadership topic of the four effective traits of leaders. As always, we have so much fun. Please check us out on Instagram at Leadership of the Leaf. Let us know your thoughts, questions, comments, bitches, gripes, complaints. We'd love to hear them. And you know, we'll if you guys have a topic or anything, let us know that there, and we'll try to hit it up, and we'll give you guys our thoughts on this, whether it's sidebar or in an actual episode.
All right. Well, until next time, my friend.
Yes. Until next time, remember, great leaders smoke great cigars.
Thank you for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. The comments and opinions expressed by the host and guests does not reflect the opinions of those that broadcast this show, nor does it reflect any of our affiliates.